This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're in the studios of the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri with three poets who are featured in a new anthology, Mike Maggio, Rose Solari, and Chloe Yelena Miller are three of the poets who are featured, among other poets, in this book. Mike is the editor-in-chief, and so what's the name of the book, and what's in it?
So the name of the book is Al di là del mare, Across the Sea, Contemporary Poetry in Italian, and Italian-American Poets, something like that.
And that's us.
And that's us. And it contains eight poets from America, Italian-Americans, and eight Italian poets from different regions in Italy. And the book is bilingual, so everything is in Italian and English. Hopefully, you know, I'm hitting audiences hopefully here and in Italy.
What a beautiful thing you've done. And I know what it takes. I know what it takes. How you manage the translation and how you organize it, you get an A+ for this. And so we're going to hear a poem by each one of the poets, three of the several that are in the book. And we're going to start with Rose Solari. And she has three full-length collections of poetry. And then she has a one-act play, Looking for Guinevere, a novel, A Secret Woman. It is marvelous. You should buy it. And we'll hear more of her credentials after a poem.
Thank you, Grace. Two ways to the same place. On the right night, say early autumn, a full or near full moon, we made our own world of it, slipping under the chain-linked sign, park closes at dark. We'd run down the rocks to the water's edge barefoot, slide out of our clothes, and splash in. There was wildness in us and wine, but we weren't stupid. We never let anyone dive drunk. We pledged we'd be friends forever. When we shook the water off, it fell like stars. Now I come here alone in daylight in my rubber-soled shoes, a protein bar in my pocket. I obey the sign, no swimming or diving allowed. I keep to the trail for the sake of my year-old titanium hip and all the new things I know a fall could mean. I sit on the rocks, drink from my reusable water bottle. I wait for myself.
And that is Rose. The last time I saw her was just this year on the Folger Shakespeare Theater stage, accompanied by an early music group. And it was a memorable event.
Folger Consort. They're incredible people.
It was an incredible, and you were the poet.
Yes.
The featured poet. It was great. So she's ours today. And here's Chloe. Chloe is a writer and teacher living in Washington. And she's the author of, let me see, three books, two and then a chapbook. Mm-hmm. And she has her BA in Italian and Italian literature from Smith, and then an MFA in poetry from Sarah Lawrence. She's the whole package. Let's hear a poem.
Thank you, Grace. This poem is Etruscan Bronzes, and it's for my friend Edward Wyckoff Williams. Etruscan Bronzes. Facebook memory. I love you. I miss you. XXXX. With your name typed, of course. No pen preserving your smallest movements, but still you, calling from the archives. It had been too long then, but now? You loved a surprise entrance like those Etruscan bronzes, noses, then cheeks emerging from thermal baths, unearthed while visitors soaked. You'd approve of such luxury amidst work, would have posed clean, a close-up in portrait mode, Tuscan background only a brown and green blur. Those bronze figures from their height of youth, artist's hand concealed by the smoothing of time, gaze upon a far-off horizon, long buried.
I love your vowels. Now that's the way to read a poem. Chloe, you've been doing a lot of things with your new book, and you have founded and direct the Brown Bag Lit. That's an online writing group. And also you teach writing and literature through the University of Maryland's Global Campus. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We'll be hearing more of your poetry. And we met Mike early on. Mike Maggio. He is booking, I'll tell you. He's winning more awards than you can put on the refrigerator. And I'm so happy with with his Italian and bringing us all together, Italian-Americans. You've done a great thing for poetry.
Well,
let's hear a poem of your own.
Oh, I didn't bring any poetry of my own. I brought poetry from some of the Italian
How
poets.
Modest can you get? Well, let's hear a poem.
Well, let me just explain why. When I'm doing a project like this, I don't want to put myself into the mix.
Understood.
I want to highlight everybody else's poetry. Plus, there's all the work that needs to be done. You know, and that really takes up my time. So well,
That's so generous.
Actually, it makes sense also. Because
yes.
otherwise they could accuse him of being self-aggrandizing.
Exactly.
And publishing a book to be featured in it, which is not a bad idea. But who am I going to talk
down.
About
So
now?
I'm going to read a poem by Angela Colella. Now, Angela is a very interesting poet. He's from the Naples area. And he's totally bilingual. So he writes in English. And then he translates his own poetry into Italian. So I'm going to read the English. This is untitled, Angela Colella. The family with a poet says he's a good author, skilled enough in oral communication, even if he is ill, with the same illness as his mother. The outside world talks to him from inside the heart, and every memory lasts only for a million seconds. In the stories he tells about himself, he's just a participant, like in a normal phone call. When he dies, he wakes up with poetry. And that, too, is an opportunity to make poetry, because death itself cannot come without a direct order from poetry. So when the poet was finally gone, his whole opus revealed to him gently, "I am your new voice now, your new box."
Oh, I like that.
Wonderful.
"I am your new voice now." I like that a lot. We should go to Italy and have a little reunion at Nella's in Florence. Yes.
And give a reading.
And give a reading in
and
Italy.
And get some Italian poets.
And meet all these wonderful people. This is a good thing you've done. So let us just look at your own poetry, Mike, because you're quite a prominent poet. And just let's hear a little bit about your own portrait. If you look at your work, your own work, in the aggregate, what story do you think you're continuing to tell over and over?
Oh, that's an interesting question, and it's a hard one to answer. I think way back, of course, I started writing poetry in high school when I didn't know anything about writing poetry. But I think as I started to grow, I was heavily involved in political poetry. But I think overall now, as I've matured, my poetry speaks through imagery. That is the major, two things that are major to my poetry, imagery and sound. And of course, I'm a linguist, and as a linguist, I know how language works. So that's a very nice combination, being a poet and a linguist. I don't know if that answers the question, but, you know, that's where I'm at right now. It's trying to convey things through imagery and through sound.
Well, I think people really appreciate a poet telling their secret, because to get inside of a poet's head is a privilege. And so it's a wonderful thing to tell us what you think your poetry shows the world. And I wonder what Rose Solari thinks about her poetry. I could sum it up, but let's see if you can. What do you think is going on? We are always telling the same story again and again in our poetry.
I think that one thing that I return to more and more as I get older is our unlived lives, the lives that we didn't get to lead.
That is hardly true about you.
And no, but it's true for my mother. It's true for many of the women who were my ancestors, my Italian women ancestors, for all the beauty of the culture. All four of my grandparents were very poor when they immigrated. There were lots of struggles. My mother was a very gifted pianist and singer and never really got to use that the way she could. So I think a lot about women's unlived lives.
Wow,
unnurtured bits. Yeah.
That is so true. They never stood a chance. They never stood a chance. There was no door open for them.
It would have been it would have been impossible for her, for example, to do what I did and get married with the decision not to ever have children.
Oh, I mean, that's interesting as well, too.
My mother couldn't have done that as a Sicilian American in the 20th century, early 20th century.
That's quite a point of view. I know that my mother was considered a domestic in their house. Chloe, how about you? You've lived in Italy a lot, too. Mm-hmm. But how does that influence your poetry? Do you think your poetry is European? How do you describe yourself? And what are you talking about in your poems?
So I always wrote, and my friend died when we were both 12, and I think I've been writing towards her since then, and not just lives unlived, but holding on to the moments that were lived and the sort of haunting of memories and keeping them present is a big part of my poetry. And I learned, my family spoke Italian, my mother's grandparents and then her parents somewhat, and then we kind of lost the language through the generations. And I learned it in college, so I came to it late. And I've found great comfort in the grammar of both Italian and English, and I feel like that places some of the hauntings and the moments that are trying to fly away.
What a beautiful answer. Mm-hmm. And you're good with landscapes and places too, and things and people. Yeah. So let's hear a good hunk of work. Rose, two at a time, please. They'll get two of Rose.
Alrighty.
Rose Solari. She has taught writing at many places, including Arizona State University, Virginia Piper Center for Creative Writing, the University of Maryland College Park, St. John's College of Annapolis, the Center for Creative Writing at Oxford University, where she actually commutes back and forth to Oxford and teaches there. And she's a member of the Iris Murdoch Society, which is a primo, really a top-rate 1% scholars in the country are part of this. And here's Rose as a poet.
Well, this poem is for my mother's older sister, my Aunt Sarah Verdi, who lived with us the whole time we were growing up, which we were very fortunate to have. And this is called Inheritance. She kept her hats in stacked boxes, never left the house without one, and its matching immaculate gloves. Taken out of school at 12 to support her brothers, she became a seamstress doing the fine work. Cuffs and collars for men's jackets, the lace trim on a lady's blouse. She improved everything she touched, rehemming her skirts with lace, replacing the plain blue buttons on a winter coat with a set of red leather twisted to fashionable knots. Her cooking was like that, simple but stretched by her own invention, the need to use everything. Tiny cinnamon buns made from trimmings of pizza dough, or her famous tomato sauce simmered on Saturday afternoons to radio broadcasts from the Metropolitan Opera. Verdi, her favorite, and of his, La Traviata. It was years later, in an elegant restaurant with my new, well-heeled lover, that I realized how little meat she put into the pot. This, I believe, is my aunt's gift to me, the gift of our ancestors, to make, from a threadbare story, a three-act arc of luminous, lasting song. To taste, in a shaving of pork or beef, the exquisite flavor of all we've had to do without.
And another.
Well, let's get to Mom. This is called Portrait of a Woman Smoking, and it's set in Rome. The first time I went to Italy, one of the things that felt so important to me that I hadn't expected was that I saw my relatives' faces everywhere. I saw people look like me. I saw people look like my mother. suddenly, everywhere I looked, I felt like I was related to everyone I saw. It was quite striking. But this moment in particular, my mom passed away in 92, so it's been a while. And this moment in particular was quite striking. This is called Portrait of a Woman Smoking. It wasn't just how she closed her eyes, tipped up her head, and clicked the flame to life. Not simply the way she inhaled, greedy, a slight tremor in her long fingers, nor even that familiar profile, the arched nose and cheekbones of her Sicilian blood, but the long-sung sigh, covering an octave, with which she set the smoke tumbling from nose and mouth at once, convinced me that my mother, gone now 2 decades, lived again on this sun-dazzled street. We were at one of those tiny tables that have to be moved sometimes for traffic, and I was using my slight Italian to the delight of the waiter, who clapped for every approximate word, and for my husband, laughing, love sound in any language. When she turned toward it, revealed her burdened, once beautiful face, I thought she might scold, ask just what had taken me so long to visit the land of my ancestors, demand the name of this man, strange to her, who paid happily for my coffee and tiramisu. But of course, we were nothing to her. At last, with a shrug that spoke of decades, no, centuries, of hope and disappointment, she stubbed out the filter on one of those ancient stone pots that are everywhere in that city, forever crumbling, forever not quite dust, and went inside. I stretched my coffee as long as I could, but she never came back.
Mm. What a portrait.
Thank you.
What a portrait. And painterly as well.
Oh, I've never forgotten that lady.
That's Rose. That is Rose. I'd like to hear some of the Italian as well, because as Mike told us, it's a bilingual book, and we had how many translators? We had Sabina.
We had about 4 or 5 translators, including myself.
Oh, yes. And you know, Mike, that was a big deal. Because then they had to be culled and they had to be parsed, and no translation came out right the first time.
But I have to say that Luigi Bonafini, who is the editor of the Journal of Italian Translation, has said that every translation works perfectly.
I know, but you combed them. And Sabina Pascarelli, of course, is a champion Italian poetry translator. So give us a poem in English and Italian, if you will, Mike.
Okay.
And tell us who the person is.
Okay, so I'm going to read, and you want me to read the English first?
Yeah, okay. Then we'll get it.
Okay, so I'm going to read a poem by Maria Luparini, who's an Italian poet, and she is from Genoa. And this is called Beyond the Window, the Sea. My father would sit at the kitchen table. Having finished her work, my mother would pull out her chair and sit beside him, silently. This was their life together. We were amazed at their differences, yet we shouted for joy. Only now, as we remember, do we know how silent love can be. And in this empty room, from this lonely table, I recognize myself and understand their honest eyes. And I search for the persistence of things in their place, as if it were they who wander silently around this house. Beyond the window, the sea. I see it, far away. I hear the waves breaking on the embankment of our placid waters. Love filled our anticipation to grow. The world was down there, expecting us. And in Italian, the title is Di là dalla finestra il mare. Mio padre sedeva al tavolo della cucina. Mia madre scostava la sedia e si sedeva accanto. Finiti i lavori senza far rumore. Era questa la loro vita insieme. Ci stupivamo della loro diversità e gridavamo d'essere felici. Solo adesso nel ricordo sappiamo come può essere silenzio l'amore. E in questa stanza vuota del tavolo solitario mi riconosco e li rivedo simili nell'onestà degli occhi. E l'immortalità cerco nelle cose al loro posto come se ci fosse. Chi si gira per casa senza far amore? Di là della finestra, il mare. Lo vedevo lontano, sentivo frangersi i flutti sulla diga delle nostre placide acque. L'amore riempiva il tempo della tessa di farci grandi. Il mondo era laggiù che ci aspettava.
Is there a more beautiful language than Italian?
No.
French thinks it is, but well, Italian is beautiful. Does. Well done, Mike.
Thank
you. Beautifully read. Mike's own credentials, even though he's not reading his own poetry, are significant. He has a novel, a novella. He has short stories. A full-length collection of poetry, let's call it Paradise, won the International Book Award for Contemporary Poetry in 2024. And his latest novella, Woman in the Abbey, won the Literary Titan Gold Book Award 2025 and was a finalist in the 2026 Maxie Awards. He is rocking. And he also
indeed
has a lot of integrity and comes to the church on time.
So, in my case, it's the mosque.
That's true. Chloe, give us a poem of your own in English and then Italian.
Okay. This poem takes place in Rome, and the title is Water Guns. The bright yellow water gun can't kill, and we aim at each other this 100-degree day in Rome. Don't enjoy getting shot, Mommy, my 9-year-old pleads as he tries to win the game with rules he made up. It's too hot to do much else. Elsewhere, a father bought his son a real gun with real bullets that killed real people. We know too much and too little. We know what guns are for. We know what to do. And yet, and yet, and yet. And in Italian, this is translated by Christina Carla. Pistole ad acqua. La pistola ad acqua giallo brillante non può uccidere. Così ci puntiamo l'un l'altro in questa torrida giornata romana. Non divertiti a farti sparare, mamma, implora il mio bambino di 9 anni, mentre cerca di vincere la partita con regole da lui inventate. Fa troppo caldo per fare altro. Altrove, un padre ha comprato a suo figlio una pistola vera, con proiettili veri, che hanno ucciso persone vere. Sappiamo troppo e troppo poco. Sappiamo a cosa servono le pistole. Sappiamo cosa fare. Eppure, eppure, eppure.
Do you approve of that translation?
I do.
You did not wish to translate your own poetry?
No.
Why is that?
I don't know.
It's fun, though, to have another dimension.
Mm-hmm. I have tried doing some translation. I worked with the poet Massimiliano Chiamenti, a Florentine poet, and it's really... It's so hard.
Also, it's a little self-conscious to do your own work. Mm-hmm. I think it is much nicer to have someone put their vibe on it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're totally lingual.
Thank you. There are many things I can't say.
And what do you do at Politics and Prose Bookstore?
So I teach some writing workshops.
At Politics and Prose?
Right now they're online, but...
Yeah, but how about New Directions? What do you do there?
Through New Directions, it's New Directions in Writing, and they have three residencies throughout the year in Virginia, and they do some other things online. And I teach two of the three poetry workshops when they meet locally.
That is interesting. Yeah. So you're really busy. And the University of Maryland Global, is that online?
That's an online program for adults returning for their undergraduate degrees. And I teach composition writing.
And it has a European component, doesn't it?
They have different campuses. My students are either based in the U.S. or they might be abroad on bases or ships elsewhere.
Mm-hmm, because I've talked to some of those poets in Germany and military people. It's really a fine program.
Mm-hmm. It's really
so
organized.
Mike, give us one more.
Okay, I'll give you another.
You know, the quality of this poetry is like so sterling. And then to have another version of it, it's just a double gift.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, it's such an honor to be in this anthology.
I agree, the level is very high.
I have to say the honor is mine because, you know, I throw out these crazy ideas and people come to me,
yes,
and they put their trust in me.
You do have crazy ideas, and it furthers civilization. You just had a 30 by 30, what was that?
Yes, annually, National Poetry Month, I do a 30 for 30 poetry celebration where I put out a call, and the first 30 poets that respond get to have a poem published on my website. One each day of the month of April. And it's been going for, I think this was the 13th or the 14th year.
It's such fun. What was the theme this year?
This year's theme was Suddenly a Flower in a Snowfield.
Mm-hmm. And I read every one of them, and it's amazing the variations you can get on that one theme. So go ahead, Mike, and read to us.
So another poem by Angelo Colella. Angelo, as I said, he writes in English and translates his own poetry to Italian. But the other thing about Angelo is he's a surrealist. And that speaks to me because I love surrealism and Dadaism and all that. And so we really hit it when we... I met him personally in Naples. So this is called Lighthouse, House of Light. Strolling along the road coast, I recognize the rook I cherish the most from the games of chess of my childhood. It had now become a lighthouse, a house of light, that is, with light for foundation, whose supporting smoothness had made it into a compassionate contrary of a siren. Every so often, there's rain to stomach, but from the edge of that cliff, the view's better than from a square in the corner. I wanted to ask, for old time's sake, to come back home with me. But what's a chessboard got to do with a lighthouse?
Do you have the Italian?
I do. Casa leggera, casa di luce. Passeggiando lungo la strada costiera, ho riconosciuto la torre che amavo di più quando giocavo a scacchi da bambino. Ormai era diventata un faro, una casa di luce, cioè con fondamenta di luce, la cui morbidezza portante l'aveva reso il compassionevole contrario di una sirena. Ogni tanto c'è da sapotare la pioggia, ma dall'oro di quella scogliera la vista è migliore che da un quadrato nell'angolo. Volevo chiedergli, in un ricordo dei vecchi tempi, di tornare a casa con me, ma cosa c'entra un scacchiere con un faro?
I love it. So we have three poets here who have contributed to this anthology, and it's going to be really a masterwork. I mean, the quality is so high. But they are first and foremost poets in their own right, before they were as well as Italian-American. So I want to know what goes on with you guys. And Rose, why is poetry a life force in your life?
Well, it started with my dad. My father was an English major in college and taught English in high schools in Boston. And if it hadn't been for World War II, he probably would have continued on with that. By the time the war was over, he was married, he had a child, and he became a civil servant to support his family. But he loved poetry. He wrote poetry. He wrote short stories for us when we were kids. And he would, because he had a classical education, he had memorized large swaths of poetry. So he would speak it regularly. Our conversations were always full of allusions to Shakespeare and Keats. And in fact, when I wouldn't go to sleep at night, he would recite Keats' sonnet Bright Star to me. You know, I'd come toddling out of my bedroom for the 18th time going, Daddy, I'm not sleepy. And he'd say, Bright Star, would I were steadfast as thou art. And then he'd turn me around and walk me back to my bedroom, reciting the rest of the poem.
You had to be a poet.
Yeah, I don't think I had a choice.
Chloe, what do we think we're doing, spending our lives teaching and writing poetry? I mean, what is it worth?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, all four of us have dedicated our everyday life to presenting, promoting, translating, creating, making art. Why?
I don't know how else to be. It feels like the way to go through a good day or a bad day or a regular day and remember the days before and plan the future and understand things. So my first collection is Viable, which is a lyric memoir, Miscarriage and Postpartum Depression. And I had a C-section, and I've worked through so many of those moments and hope that the poems speak to other women in similar situations. And then later I came across a poem, Indigo, by Ellen Bass, and she just has the verb airlifted to describe when she was born through C-section. And somehow that one verb has reframed my entire experience. And I really think that the process of reading and writing and editing and sharing and being in communication with others can make our lives real.
Well, you're talking about being fully alive through language, that one word. I love that story. Mm-hmm. And Mike, I know that you value a writer's life, and you might want to speak about that. But I also want to know what you think is the value of translating and having something from other cultures.
So translating is probably a very thankless job because you spend hours and hours and hours, you know, trying to get it right. And then along comes the reader and spends 5 minutes reading it, you know, and I don't think it's really appreciated. But I have translated Arabic poetry as well as Italian poetry now. And I think the value is that you're bringing other cultures for the American audience, or at least an English-speaking audience, to learn about and to appreciate, particularly when it comes to Arabic poetry, because, you know, Arabs have a bad rap in general. And so when you bring somebody like Lamia Abbas Amara, who is known as the love poet, you know, she's not a terrorist. She's a love poet, you know, and so you're bringing this different experience that I think Americans need to know about. Mm. That's the important thing.
That's the bridge. Thank you. I would like a final poem from each poet, starting with Rose.
Okay. This one is a little more fun than some of my others. And as I mentioned before, something that my mother couldn't do that I did was decide not to be a mother. And this poem is called Why I Am Not a Mother. My stepson's daughter has a tiny blister on one toe because it was wet in the park this morning. So she had to take off her sock, put her hard shoes back on. And though the chasing and sliding and landing in puddles was all giggles, back inside she's pouring sad noises now. How very much it hurts. So there's a three-way debate between her and her mom and dad because she's already pulled one Band-Aid off but wants another. And then when her mom puts a new one on, she screams and buries her face in her father's lap until he pulls it off again. And because she studies ballet, as I did, and because she's best in her class, as I once was, I want to take her foot in my hand and tell her, this is just the beginning. You will have so many blisters. Your toes will bleed and callous. Every part of your body will hurt at different times in different ways because it is truly a bloody business to try to make art any way at all, but most especially when the instrument is the body you craft against time, against nature, against its animal self. But you'll persist, and when it's gone, you will miss it. Always, like a first best lover who stayed forever perfect while you got older and weaker and smaller. Instead, I watch her parents work their patient tag team magic until she slings herself across her grandfather's lap, all pain forgotten. I sit on the floor beside her. We share a cupcake.
Amen. Amen. That sounds like why you should be a mother. And Chloe, a closing poem from Chloe. You don't pronounce a Y, do you?
Elena.
Elena Miller.
Pomegranate. You identify the red flowering tree, reach for a fallen bulb, pull it open to exhume the seeds. See, Mama? This tree, with its twisted bark, reaches up and out from our rented terrace. I water it, another woman's tree. Or maybe I shouldn't, because of the drought. What do I know? We'll be gone before the fruit ripens. The wind carries charred plant fragments and ash to our Roman neighborhood from the wildfires nearby. A charcoal black leaf with perfectly visible veins and jagged edges lands and disintegrates into black dust. I wish you, child, all the plants and clean air, no matter who waters them, and no matter what fruit they bear.
The poet notices everything. And a final poem from Mike.
Okay, I'm going to read another by Maria Luperini. In the Lush Gardens. We walk through the lush gardens, heedless, holding hands. Time led us, transformed us into age-old branches from which sprouted a season of new leaves. Nearby on the path, I spotted our footsteps. They vanished like ghosts in the damp rain, advanced softly like a whisper. Departures faded in memory. We watch ourselves change, tree reaching up towards the same sky, roots embedded in the earth's core. There are things about us we don't know, not even the gift of leaves. It's secret. We only know green, its vibrant hue. We know the brief joy of summer, the immortal blue that calls to us. From our years comes the silent response.
No matter what the culture is, the poets feel all the same. We're dealing with the same things. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress in the studios of the library. We wish to thank the library for that. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin. We thank friends of the program, the Sinipid Fund, the Rivada Foundation, Yongki Kim Renault, Avide Shoshani, Natalie Canavour, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our engineer is Sandy Kinlock. I'm Grace Cavalieri.